Good evening, good evening. Good to be here tonight. It's great weather today. So it's nice to be out and about and enjoying it. So thanks for taking some time out of your day to join us to study the book of Daniel. So we're going to spend time in the book of Daniel next 2 weeks. Tonight we're going to cover the first 6 chapters, and then next week we will cover the remaining chapters of the book. But before we get that started, let's start off with a prayer and get into the study tonight. Our dear Heavenly Father, we want to thank you so much for this time we have once again to get together, open up your book, and to read from it, and then take these examples you've given us and these events to help us to understand you more and to understand your plan for us and the opportunity of salvation through your Son, Jesus Christ. I want to thank you so much for all the folks that are here tonight, and also would ask that you'd be with those who are not able to be with us. Help us to help them in any way that we can, and help them to come back here so that we can enjoy one another and encourage one another again. We thank you so much for Jesus and his example, and we pray in his holy name. Amen. Okay, so the first 6 chapters of Daniel. So let's go back a little bit and try to understand a little bit. What do we know about Daniel already? Have we heard of him before? Have we studied Daniel before? Do we have any events that occurred in his life that we might be familiar with? And I'll just wait while you guys throw them at me.
Lions,
Dan. That's a good one.
Oh, I thought you meant before this.
No. What do we know about Daniel already? I mean, just we've studied Daniel a few times, probably, right?
Well, he was diligent and did the things that he was ready to do according to the scriptures.
Okay, good. Diligent in the scriptures, very devout person to God, right? Anything else that we remember out of the book of Daniel that you recall? Did he have any friends? Yeah, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Those were the Babylonian names for them, right? And so we learn about them as well, so that's good. Anything else?
Didn't he do dreams?
So dream interpreter, yep, that's a good one. Dream interpreter. He did, yeah. So there was some overlap between Ezekiel and Daniel because they were both taken off into captivity, probably in that first run.
He prayed diligently.
He prayed diligently. I like that. Yep. Okay. Good. Those are good ones. And all of those are in the first 6 chapters. The one thing that I wanted to cover as well, one of the other things was that he refused to eat the king's food. Right? So he refused to eat the king's food, and there's some lessons in there too. And something to consider as well. It's certainly not a diet plan. It's not a diet plan that's being presented in the Bible, but it is an example of what Daniel was doing as far as being able to continue to be a devout Jew at the time. Okay, good. So as we look at the first 6 chapters, what you'll also notice is that we've spent a lot of time, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, we've had a lot of symbolic language, we've had a lot of structured poetic lines, we've had groupings helping with major thoughts, we've had figurative imagery, we've had wordplay. We have none of that in the first 6 chapters of Daniel. And it's actually quite interesting because it doesn't typically follow some of the other formats of the previous prophets that we've read, but it is kind of a narrative of his life, and that's kind of interesting, and it gives us kind of an insight to a little bit about what God is trying to tell us. So as we look at all of the prophets that we've read so far, and then some of the things that we've read, say when we were going through 2 Kings and Chronicles and all of that, you're looking at some of this as repetitive, and you're kind of going, why is this all repetitive, and what's happening? And so Daniel gives us kind of a quick break from that, and now we're going to learn a little bit about Daniel. And one of the things that you can learn, what can you learn from Daniel's existence in Babylon? Just kind of at the top 3,000-foot level. What can we learn from that?
You can serve the Lord in places, really, not in line with serving Him.
Great, great idea. So you've got an example of people serving the Lord outside of their normal place, or actually, we might even be able to call that maybe a hostile land or a hostile environment, if we want to call it that. So we have an example of someone who's able to do that. And so what's the application for us?
I shouldn't let the people around me pull me down.
There you go, right? Shouldn't let the people around me pull me down from what my goal is to serve God.
And that God is with us wherever we go.
There you go. And God's with you wherever we go. I like that one too. Because as we look at some of the other events in Daniel's life, I think that it'll show us that as well. So if we were to look at various, let's say, I'm going to step back a little bit and say, if we look at various Christians in around the world, here in America, we've got it pretty, I would say we've got it pretty cush as far as being able to worship the Lord. I'm sure some of you have been in other countries where that's not the case. Or you've heard of people under hardships where that's not the case, right? But you do have people who are able to do that. And we have a lot of folks that go out and preach to those folks. And those environments are a lot more hostile than here. But we do know that that's possible. God's with them, and they can serve God even in a hostile environment. Very good. What else do we learn about the environment that Daniel is living in and will prophesy in as well? If you step back even further, so you got the environment. What about, I'll help you out. What about the government environment, governmental environment there for Daniel? So I think we have an opportunity to learn that he can live in another nation and still serve God, and he's under a completely different rule than what he's used to, and he's serving in that specific government as a government official in a land that was not his own, right? So he's serving, right? So he's in exile. Is it exile? Is that what we're calling it? He's in exile, and he is climbing the administrative ladder in this country that he's part of, that he was taken off to. So I think that's interesting as well. So he's serving a nation that is not God's chosen, and he's excelling at it.
That's all because of him serving God.
Because I'm serving God. So it's very parallel. Do we know of someone else who had that same type of situation? It's going to be way, I'll give you a hint, way back in Genesis.
James in the Bible?
No. Close. Jacob? Did I get that right? Was Jacob in Israel? Did Jacob get down to Egypt somehow?
Yes.
Yes. Am I saying it right? Jacob, right?
Changed the name.
Yeah. Now that I'm thinking, hold on. Joseph, thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. I knew something was wrong. I was getting the looks, and I was like, I said something wrong. Joseph, thank you. So Joseph had a similar situation. He was also taken, I guess you could say, against his will, and taken down into Egypt and sold as a slave, and then worked his way up into the administration of Egypt. Okay, and so here you've got an example of Daniel doing something very similar. Taken off into exile, chosen as one of the, fine young men that they brought out of Jerusalem, and then chosen to become part of kind of that administrative staff for Babylon. And so you see him rising through the ranks there. So that's good. The other part would be, as you look through the book of Daniel, how many kingdoms did we see rise and fall?
Three.
Three? Okay. So we can say
Assyria, Babylonian, and Medes and Persians.
Yep, Medes and Persians, right? So I would say, when I say three, I would say you've got Israel falls, right? Egypt falls. Then you've got, they both fall to Babylon. And then the Medes and Persians come in after that. And then if we go a little further in our Western Civ class, then the Greeks come in and take over from there, right? So you can see all of this progression. So what do we learn from that? God is using nations to do his work. And so what we learn from there is that God's work will get done even through nations that may not be what we call God-fearing, right? So they're not God-fearing nations, but God's using them as tools. In fact, was it in Jeremiah where we discovered that God called Babylon a hammer? God's hammer. That was meting out judgment for him, right? And so through all of this, does God's will get done? Yeah, right? And so you see God's handiwork through the nations that are being used, even in the book of Daniel, which I think is very interesting. And to me, as you look at the visual that's being presented here, the events that occurred during Daniel's time, I mean, being an administrator in that government, that would make you fearful. What typically happens to the administration of governments when they get taken over? They usually get terminated. So good. So you see the act of God moving through the nations as he's using them as his tool to get God's will done. And in this case, what's God's will during the book of Daniel?
Punishment for the Israelites and then bringing the remnant back home.
So, exactly. So you've got the Israelites who are being punished in exile, and that includes those who were guilty and those who were innocent. Right? So everyone's there that is supposed to go through this punishment. So they're being punished, and I guess the other thing that we need to realize is why are they being punished? Because they're disobedient. And again, we'll see that record again to make sure that people understand that the people were going through this, they were still going through a judgment. And on the other side of that, right, we talked about that earlier, on the other side of that is hope. And so we see that as well. We'll see an example of that in Daniel too. All right, so those are kind of the big themes I wanted to call to your attention there as we go through these various chapters. As we think about one more thing that we'll probably bring into mind, as you look at the characters of the kings that were present at the time, what was their main downfall as a character flaw? Yeah, so I'm in charge, pride. So we've got pride issues that are being demonstrated as well. And then, again, you've got God's hand in that, and what is the consequence for pride? And we'll see some of that too. And you'll see that, we saw that with all the kings in Israel too. You saw some pride issues there. And so making sure that you continue to stay humble in God's presence, I think, is also another lesson that we can learn from this. All right. Any comments, questions, anything you want to cover while we're in the first six chapters?
Yes, but it's all said and done. Those people that were punishing his people, no, they were punished also.
Yeah, exactly. So even though God's people were punished, the people who had brought them
into exile also got punished. So Babylon fell, Medes and Persians fell, Egyptians fell, right? So all of these various nations ended up falling because God used them as a tool, but they did not escape punishment, right? So good point. All right, so the first chapter we have kind of bringing Daniel into Babylon, okay? And then from there, you've got a scenario where we learn about Daniel's faithfulness and his wisdom. So let's look a little bit at chapter 1 and look in there. So we've got some time frames here. So in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim in Judah, so that's the same time that Ezekiel was just becoming, you know, what his role was. What was Ezekiel's role? He's part of a priestly family, right? So he was kind of being raised up in that priestly family. So he's kind of in that same realm as Jehoiakim, the king of Judah. So he's the last one as they started to fall to Babylon. You've got, in verse 3, the king commanded Ashpenaz, the chief eunuch, to bring some of the people of Israel, both of the royal family and of the nobility, youths without blemish, and of good appearance, and skillful in all wisdom, endowed with knowledge, understanding, learning, and competent to stand in the king's palace to teach them the literature and language of the Chaldeans. And so you've got a group of people going in and they're saying, okay, we're going to grab these folks. They look like they are willing to learn and have, apparently they're supposed to be good looking. and they're supposed to be able to kind of show some wisdom and knowledge. Okay, and they're going to take those and they're going to teach them more about the Chaldean culture, the Babylonian culture, and see how they do with that, because they're trying to bring them into the administration. And so Daniel was one of these. In verse 5, you've got this section about food. It says, the king assigned them a daily portion of the food that the king ate and the wine that he drank, and they were to be educated for 3 years, and at the end of the time, they were to stand before the king. So among those were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah of the tribe of Judah. And the chief of the eunuchs gave them names. Daniel he called Belteshazzar, and Hananiah he called Shadrach, and Mishael he called Meshach, and Azariah he called Abednego. All right, so now you've got them changed to their Babylonian names, right? But Daniel had an issue in verse 8. Yeah, verse 8, Daniel had an issue. So Daniel resolved that he would not defile himself with the king's food or with the wine that he drank. All right, so you've got a first decision by Daniel in this new country, and I got to tell you, that's got to, you know, we talk about courage of the lion's den. How about the courage of this right here? You're new, you're a new kid right into Babylon, and you're like, you know what? First of all, he did what? In his mind, he made a resolution. And his resolution was, you know what? I'm not going to defile myself with the king's food. Why? It was against his religion. So, okay, so let's talk about what part of it was against his religion.
Probably eating things that would be considered unclean.
Could be, yep. Could be things unclean. Highly likely that they were sacrificed to an idol, right? And so now you've got kind of a double whammy. So, excellent choice by Daniel to say, you know what? I don't want to defile myself with the food. But he's having to make a decision, and he's having to make a stand. So he's drawing a line in the sand right there from the get-go. I guess the question to us is, like, how many of us would be willing to do that? Right? Yes, Bobby.
Well, I think Daniel was only about 16 years old at the time.
Okay.
So a 16-year-old now,
mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's a good point too. So part of maybe the people that they had taken out of the
the country had, you could tell people with that type of character, right? Some people with a single point of mind that's able to focus. And Daniel had a focus on being able to worship God anywhere. So maybe that's a testament to his parents. Maybe that helped him along. And he made a resolve in his own mind that even though we don't know anything about his parents, other than maybe he was away from them, I don't know. Making some suppositions, but certainly a good amount of character and decision-making on Daniel's point at a very young age, right? So you've got him, he's going to refuse the food, and then he has an example, right? He's talking to the chief, who's the guy, the chief? Chief eunuch, chief of the eunuchs, and he asks them to help him out. So the other thing is, he's gaining favor with the authority at the same time. So he's drawing a line in the sand, and he's still gaining favor with the authorities at the time.
But you know, I like how it's worded, said God granted Daniel that favor.
Yes.
And so he put the kindness into the guard's heart, or the official.
Right, and so you see God's hand working through that, where he's helping Daniel out by giving him courage, number one, saying he's going to trust in the Lord. Number two, the Lord's going to help him out by helping him gain favor. And this might be that this particular guard is like he's more reasonable to listen to what's happening around him. And maybe he's just more aware. There's something different about this Daniel and his friends. I'd like to know more. And there's people like that. You walk up on the street where they're like, hey, I'd like to know more about you. You did something that I noticed, and I want to know more about you. Right, I think I told that story. We had moved to a new house, and one of the neighbors came over. Where'd you get all these friends? And they wanted to learn more, right? So how great is that? Just an opportunity to get to know you a little bit more. So maybe that's what's happening there. All right, so he gained some favors there. All right. And in verse 17, he says, as for these four youths, God gave them learning and the skill in all literature and wisdom. And Daniel had understanding in all the visions and dreams. And so you've got Daniel with kind of this, another special talent that he has. But what does it say? God gave them learning, just like you said. God gave them the learning, the capacity to learn, understand, and absorb the knowledge that they were being taught. And so that's also a blessing as well. Any comments or anybody want to make on that? Okay, so continuing to gain in knowledge. In verse 20, and in every matter of wisdom and understanding about what the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters that were in his kingdom. And listen to this, and Daniel was there until the first year of Cyrus. So from here, where he started out, he continued in the administration through the first year of Cyrus, which is when? Now you got names being named. So Cyrus is way over here in the Medo-Persian rule. Right? So they're saying, okay, here's where Daniel started, and here's where he's going to end up at. Okay, so good. All right, any comments, questions there before we get into chapter 2?
Well, Cyrus is the one that started having to make provisions to go back and rebuild Jerusalem.
Exactly. So part of the Medo-Persian rule was that there was a little bit more compassion for those who had been taken away from their lands, and he was allowing them to go back. And that's where we have Ezra and Nehemiah. Right? So good. Yes, Norse.
I'll say, you know, back in those days, when a person was able to interpret a dream, he found favor with it. You know, when the king was on, like you said, that same thing with Joseph, when he got locked up in prison, when they found he interpreted a dream, he let him out. So that being able to a good thing when somebody could interpret a dream.
Yeah, that's very good. So that's a great parallel. Joseph did the same thing. Not Jacob, but Joseph. Joseph did the same thing in the ability to interpret the dream, and then were those dreams good news?
Not always,
right? And so now you're like, ooh, I got the interpretation of this dream which God gave me, and now I've got to deliver bad news. And so that's another opportunity. Gaining courage and delivering bad news. So, okay. So now in chapter 2, we've got Nebuchadnezzar. He has a dream.
and his spirit was troubled. Verse 2, the king commanded that the magicians and the enchanters and the sorcerers and the Chaldeans be summoned to tell the king his dream. All right. So, there's the great example. He brings them all in. These are all the people he's been training all the time. Daniel was part of that group. Daniel and his three friends were part of that group, and they all brought him in. They're like, okay, I had a dream. You need to tell me what it means. And what did they say? This is the kind of twist you probably didn't expect, right? They're like, tell me the dream, but
tell them the dream and interpretation.
You wasn't going to tell them the dream. He's like, you need to tell me what my dream was and then tell me what it means. And that's tough. That's a tough ask right there. So, can you imagine doing that with your spouse? Man, I had a tough dream last night.
Well, that act takes God.
Yeah. So, correct point. That act takes God. So, you've got God giving him the opportunity to know what the dream was. Because I guess the question is, who put the dream in Nebuchadnezzar's mind? God did.
I did.
Yeah. So, that's a great learning tool there. So, he's going to kill them all. He's like, you can't tell me what my dream was. I'm going to kill you all. And then that's where Daniel did what? Great opportunity. Another learning point. Daniel's in a group of people that's all going to be killed because they can't tell the king his dream. What does Daniel do? He prayed to God. Yes. Yes. Right? So he's going to God, he says, help me with this wisdom. Give me some wisdom so that I can do that. So he went out. Daniel replied with prudence, and he's like, he wants to find out, how do we do this? Daniel went into his house and made the matter known to Hananiah and told him to seek mercy from God of heaven and his companions. He told all his friends, he said, we're in verse 16 or verse 18. Yeah, verse 18. Told them to seek mercy from God of heaven concerning this mystery so that Daniel and his companions might not be destroyed with the rest of the wise men. Verse 19. Then the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a vision of the night, and Daniel blessed the God of heaven, and Daniel answered and said, because the name of God forever, blessed be the name of God forever and ever, in whom belong wisdom and might. He changes times and season. He removes kings and sets up kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who have understanding. He then was able to go and tell the king his dream. Any comments or questions there? So, another great opportunity. Tells the king his dream. What's the dream about? What's the big arching story of the dream of Nebuchadnezzar? All right, so we see that in verse 36, right? Verse 36. This was the dream. Now we will tell the king his interpretation. O king, king of kings, to whom the God of heaven has given the kingdom and the power. Great point there. Daniel gives the credit to God and not the king, right? So he's like, here's God of heaven has given you the power and might. So realize that offset. And he tells them, he says, that's part of the interpretation, but the image was, you've got an image of a head of gold, a chest and arms of silver, thighs, middle and thighs of bronze, and then the legs of iron and feet of clay and part clay, stone, or iron and part clay. And then there was a huge rock that came down and crushed it. Right? And then that rock stayed still. Is that correct? Did I get it all? Became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. All right. So Daniel's telling him the interpretation of that. Number one, that's kind of a weird dream. Right? Guaranteed that. It's like, well, that's interesting. But now he's going to tell him what it means. And he talks about all the various nations. In verse 40, it says, "And then there shall be a fourth kingdom strong as iron, because iron breaks into pieces and shatters all things. And like iron that crushes, it shall break and crush all of these." Verse 41, "And as you saw, the feet and toes were partly of potter's clay and partly of iron. And it shall be a divided kingdom, but some of the firmness of the iron shall be in it, just as you saw the iron mixed with the soft clay. And the toes of the feet were partly iron and partly clay. And so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly brittle. And you saw the iron mixed with the soft clay, and so they will mix with one another in marriage. But they will not hold together, just as iron does not mix with clay." And he says again, "And in these days, the kings of God of heaven..." In those days, in the days of those kings, there we go, "the God of heaven will set up a kingdom that shall never be destroyed, nor shall the kingdom be left to another people. And it shall break into pieces all of these kingdoms and bring them to an end, and it shall stand forever." Okay, so now you've got Daniel interpreting that dream and talking to him about all the nations that will, one of them is his, and one of them is going to be after him. And then suddenly there'll be a great nation that will be set up that by God, and it shall stand forever. So a great vision. All right, so through all of that, was that good news for Nebuchadnezzar? I mean, he's like, that's interesting. And it's cool. He's like, yeah, that was my dream. So thank you for that, and you told me what it was. And then what happens, he said in verse 46, "The king Nebuchadnezzar fell on his face and paid homage to Daniel and commanded an offering and incense and offered up to him. King answered and said to Daniel, 'Truly your God is God of all gods and Lord of kings and a revealer of mysteries, for you have been able to reveal the mystery.'" So you've got Nebuchadnezzar acknowledging God as Lord of kings, God of all gods. Okay, then Daniel is promoted. He gets to continue to do what he's doing. And now you've got the promotion of his friends as well. So they're in charge of a lot of things that are happening. So chapter 3, Nebuchadnezzar's golden image. What do we have happening here? Nebuchadnezzar is now doing what? He's going to build a giant golden idol. And so what's that a symbol of? You've got some pride issues here, right? I'm going to build a giant golden, and whenever I say, you have to bow down to it. And you've got his friends kind of helping him put that together, because they're like, hey, you should put up a big image and glorify it. And so he ends up doing it, and then what ends up happening? He calls everybody in. He's like, hey, we're going to have this huge, when the trumpets sound and the music plays, then you all bow down to it. So again, you've got another testing point. You've got crowd rule or mob rule. How are you going to work against that? Because that's what Daniel and his friends did. Daniel and his friends drew a line in the sand and said what? The magic word, no. Yeah, I'm not going to do it. Not going to do it. And so what's the amazing part about it? Because Nebuchadnezzar knows who these guys are. He had promoted them. He knows who they are. He knows that they're great in what they do. And that they serve the God of all gods. And he's asking them to bow down in front of a golden image that he put up. So he's like, okay, I'm going to give you another chance. Right? I'll give you another chance. And so... plays the music, blows the horns, and they still don't do it. And so now you've got Nebuchadnezzar, he gets all enraged. Why is he getting enraged? They're defying him, yeah. They're defying him, and they're defying the golden image that he put up. And these are people who are in the administration. So, yeah, he's pretty upset about it. In fact... I like this in verse 19. Nebuchadnezzar was filled with fury, and the expression of his face was changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. His face was changed, filled with fury, because he is defying them. And then he ordered the furnace to be heated 7 times more, and he bound them, and the men who put them in were thrown in the furnace. And those who threw them in died because it was so hot, right? So he overheated that furnace and threw them in. What was the other thing? What did he say? There was a saying because... in verse... Where is it? Verse 15, he says, "Who is the God who will deliver you out of my hands?" Right? So he's telling him, you're going to go in the furnace. He's like, who's going to deliver you? Well, I guess he forgot about the dream interpretation earlier, right? And so, obviously, we go through that event, and they come out of there not even smelling like smoke. Okay? And then you have the telling of the event where they were joined by a fourth person, right? And they came out of that fire with no problem. All right. And then again, chapter 4, Nebuchadnezzar praises God. And he says, "It seems too good to me to show the signs and wonders that the Most High God has done for me. How great are his signs, how mighty are his wonders, and his kingdom, his everlasting kingdom, his dominance, or his dominion endures from generation to generation." Okay. And then he has another dream. Chapter 4, another dream. And so, what's this other dream about? Okay. Verse 10, "The visions in my head as I lay in bed were these. And behold, a tree in the midst of the earth, and the height was great, and the tree grew, became strong, and the top reached to heaven. And it was visible to the end of the whole earth. And its leaves were beautiful, and the fruit abundant, and in it all the food for all. And the beasts of the field found shade under it, and the birds of the heavens lived under its branches, and all flesh was fed from it." And verse 13, it says, "And I saw in the visions in my head that as I lay in bed, and behold, a watcher, a holy one, came down from heaven, and he proclaimed aloud and said thus, chop down the tree and lop off its branches, strip off its leaves and scatter its fruit. Then let the beasts flee from under it and the birds from its branches, but leave the stump. Leave the stump of its roots in the earth, bound with a band of iron and bronze amid the tender grasses of the field." And it says, "Let him be wet with the dew of heavens, and let his portion be with the beasts of the grass of the earth, and let his mind be changed from a man, and let the beast mind be given to him, and let 7 periods of time pass over him." Interesting. Okay. So what is the interpretation of the dream? Because did Daniel have to tell him about that one too? All right. So Daniel's got to deliver bad news, because who's the tree? Nebuchadnezzar, yeah. And what's going to happen to him?
He's
going to be chopped down. And the beasts are going to flee. And he's going to let his portion with the beasts of the grass of the earth and let his mind be changed. And so you've got this scenario where Daniel interprets a second dream, tells him to, hey, here's what it means. I think you should take this as a warning. And in verse 28, chapter 4, it says, "And all of this came upon King Nebuchadnezzar, and at the end of 12 months, he was walking on the roof of the royal palace of Babylon. And the king answered and said, is not this great Babylon, which I have built by my mighty power, a royal residence, and for the glory of my majesty?" Verse 31, "While the words were still in the king's mouth, there fell a voice from heaven, O King Nebuchadnezzar, to you it is spoken, the kingdom has departed from you. And you shall be driven from among men, and your dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field, and you shall be made to eat grass like an ox. 7 periods of time shall pass over you until you know that the Most High rules the kingdom of men and gives it to whom he wills." Immediately the word was fulfilled against Nebuchadnezzar, and he was driven among men and ate grass like an ox, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven until his hair grew long as eagle's feathers, and his nails were like bird claws. That's quite a visual, right? And I think doing a little bit of research, I didn't do a ton, but doing a little bit of research, there's very little history outside of the Bible of Nebuchadnezzar during that time. But they know there was a time from where there was a lot of writing about Nebuchadnezzar, and then there was a time that it wasn't, and then this new kingdom came into place. So you do see some of that. Verse 36, does Nebuchadnezzar get relief? Right? How does he do that? Yeah. He turns his mind. He lifted his eyes to heaven, and reason returned to him. And he blessed the Most High and praised and honored him who lives forever. So can we say that Nebuchadnezzar was a spiritual man? Tough one, right? Hey, Bobby, yeah?
Well, he kind of was, but he forgot who gave him the possession that he had.
Yeah.
Sometimes we do the same thing.
Yes, we do, don't we? And that is a great lesson. That's the lesson to learn from us. Things are going great, and we forget where we got it all from. And then even whether it's possessions or talents that we have, or maybe some things that we're not using, what's our most valuable possession that we have?
Time.
Great, you're reading my mind. Yeah, time. What are we going to do with the time? Right? What are we going to do with the time? Are we going to live for God or not? All right, so that's chapter 4. Chapter 5, we've got a scenario. So you've got a new king, Belshazzar. And how's Belshazzar doing? Does Belshazzar have a character flaw? And his character flaw is the same as most kings, right? What's his is pride again, right? So pride. But the thing that really got it all started... was he did what? He was having a big party, and he did what? Yeah. So he's like, hey, remember we took all that stuff from the temple. Hey, grab that stuff. Let's drink from it. Let's use all these utensils. And so he defiled all of the utensils that came out of the temple. What was the consequence for that? Right? Verse 5, immediately the fingers of a human hand appeared and wrote on the plaster of the wall of the king's palace opposite the lampstand. I like this part. It's a great description. And the king saw the hand as it wrote, and the king's color changed, and his thoughts alarmed him, and his limbs gave way, and his knees knocked together. Would we kind of do the same thing? Right? So, That's the portion where Belshazzar has been given his judgment, and his kingdom was taken away from him as well. And that night he was overtaken. All right, so that's chapter 5. Chapter 6, real quick, and I know we've got a few moments left. We got exactly 60 seconds left. Daniel in the lion's den. So, again, we've got Daniel drawing a line in the sand, and he is not, right? What is he not going to do? He's not going to stop praying, right? He's not going to stop praying. And did he go into private? Did he, like, go in and shut the door and do his thing? No, he did it the same way he always did. With the window open, and everybody could see. So Daniel's drawing a line in the sand. Darius, who wrote the decree, right? He's like, he's not feeling good about that decree, is he? How did Darius get to sign that decree?
He got tricked into signing that decree.
Yeah, yeah. All his buddies that were supposed to be part of his inner circle caused that to happen. Absolutely. So great lessons from there. Keep that in mind as we go forward. We'll finish that off at the end of next week. So appreciate it. We'll see you next week.